So a little bit about where we've been for the people that are just joining us. We started out with a discussion about the philosophy of what we're trying to do. We moved into ADD and the fact that there was a judge that I was out of Washington as an example. He focused specifically on ADD and addressing the issue, and he found that it reduced recidivism by 40%. So we moved from there into thinking about the possibility that there is not just one type of ideal person out there, that perhaps there's a different person, or there's a different personality, there's something else that's out there. And the amazing thing about the conversation, I just happened to meet Mr. Kaufman just in the hallway here, and we started talking. And I was talking about this alternative sentencing project and what we're trying to do, and he just piped in. He said, you know, the military 60 years ago realized that the people that were the best, like he said, the people that were the best in the foxhole were the worst in the garrison, the worst in this kind of organized, civilized life. And so the reason they started the Article 15 process was because if you remove those people from society or you remove those from the group, you're doing damage to yourself. You're hurting the group. So if you accept some of those, if you accept any part of that, my hope is that you think that perhaps there is something to this. There might be some other type of person. And whatever they are, an ADD, a warrior, a man, whatever it is, there's something to it. And I think that if ADD is kind of a convenient framework for that, because there's ways to identify ADD, to see it, either objective, see it from just visually see it, the way a person might be sitting at the defendant's table, and when really important issues start to come up about their future, they'll fidget. I do that for sure. Or things that they're uncomfortable about, they'll fidget and they'll start to sway. And what they're doing is they're trying to regulate themselves. They don't even know what they're doing. It's just how it happens. But that, for me, that's one of the easiest ways to see it. Another way to see it is very sporadic, very erratic behavior going from one subject to the next, to the next, to the next. But what are they really doing when they're doing that sort of thing? When they're jumping from subject to subject, that is creative thinking. They're connecting seemingly unrelated topics. So when you look at laws, or you look at rules, or you look at even any part of academia, and even law school, sorry, Professor Gahalb, very linear. We started at point A and we're trying to get to point B. How do we get there? A global or creative thinker wants to know why. How does that affect everything else? They want to know everything at once. And it's extremely frustrating, I'm sure. I'm sure I've been really frustrating. I up my medications. But there's something to that. And we already have the tools to address it, to identify it, to deal with it. But all that's needed really is an appreciation that maybe there is something to this. Maybe there's a value to that person. If they are in the warrior aspect, willing to sacrifice their life for society, perhaps they do care deeply and instinctually about society. And if we remove them, we remove that creative mind, the way that we're doing it, well, if you accept some of those premises that these people care deeply for society, if we remove this group of people, then theoretically we should have a fractured society. I think that's what we have. We have people that don't get along, that don't visit, that don't join together. There's no crossing the aisle. It's become we're sort of to an extreme point. So all of this is really just an intervention and a way to appreciate perhaps there's something, just something to this. And that's enough. I wanted to read a quote. It's in the guidelines. It's footnote 8 if you'd like to follow it. But it was by a psychologist, and she was studying addictions. And she, I'll just read it here. I'll never forget when a 20-year-old man who was part of a small group of college students that I was interviewing said, "Let me show you the box." I knew that he was a tall guy, but when he stood up, it was clear that he was at least 6'4". He said, "Imagine living like this," as he crouched down and pretended that he was stuffed inside a little box. Still hunched over, he said, "You really only have three choices. You spend your life fighting to get out, throwing punches at the side of the box and hoping it will break. You always feel angry, and you're always swinging. Or you just give up. You don't give a shit about anything." At that point, he slumped over on the ground, and you could hear a pin drop in the room. Then he stood up, shook his head, and he said, Or you stay high so you don't realize how unbearable it is. That's the easiest way. If there is something to this, if there is something to this other personality, then our war fighters, our soldiers that have come back from wherever they're fighting the war in the world, if they come back and they are this other thing, and they step into a civilized society that has absolutely no appreciation for what they are and tries to change them into something they are not, they don't fit in. They lose themselves. They become isolated from their friends, from others, from family. And the only escape, or one of the only escapes, is either they get some help, they get part of a group, they get some appreciation for what they are, or it's suicide or drugs or just lashing out at society. So perhaps the rise of the rise of people lashing out, maybe there's something that's not just biological and new chemicals that are in the water. Maybe there's something that we are doing to them by trying to control the world and every single aspect of it. So I framed it kind of like a Kichita. That's the Dakota word for warrior. There is some, this is my little Akichita. That's Cassia there with the 30 seconds. Yes, that's upstairs, and they're kind of making a joke. But when I think about what she's going to struggle with in life, because she is sporadic, she's erratic, she's passionate, she likes to wear roller skates in the kitchen, she sings, she dances, she's really irritating sometimes, but there's a value to her. And if she goes into a school system that has removed physical education, that's removed, or at least a daily physical education, has removed art and music, all those things that are going to speak to her little spirit, if she gets into a system that doesn't appreciate her, she's off for a dark path. And think about the possibility that, what about when that little person grows up in a single-parent household or in a household where there is no help for her? So is there something to the first concept that I have? Is there something to this? This risk versus control idea. Is there proof in the growth of law, the growth of criminal law, the growth of administrative law? For defense attorneys, why is it that administrative law is now available as a tool to control human behavior? And there's it's not subject to constitutional challenge. It's control. Think about laws like, and I understand that the purpose is that the intention is good, but what about laws that prohibit you from using a plastic straw? And if there is this other person that's irrational and erratic, do we want to control that level of behavior? What about thought or speech? We do all of that stuff. We control all of that. What about, here's a hard one, what about talking on a cell phone while you're driving? Potential that could cause an accident, or you could cause an accident, you could hurt somebody. So the new laws in certain states, you get caught talking on your phone, the fine can be $600 to $1,000 and an immediate loss of your driver's license. From the public policy perspective, well, yeah, we're trying to limit the chance of injury. But from the individual standpoint, they're punished for a crime they didn't commit, namely causing a serious accident. But we're going far down this path. So we're going to pause there. That's all that's rhetorical. Food for thought. Okay, so we're going to take this a step further. And this is the last piece, and then we're kind of over the hump, really. Now we're going to add one more little piece to this concept. If there is something to this, the doctor had talked about inability to control emotions. If there is something to that story, the philosophical story that the one side has physical strength but is emotionally vulnerable, and the other side might be emotionally strong but physically vulnerable, then the balance, that we have to have balance, and the balance is learning about the tools of emotional abuse and emotional manipulation. And it's important, because the way that criminal justice works, the way that family law works, is you only see, we judge everything based on the bruises that you see, the damage or the injury that's visible. But if we don't understand, if we take this sort of dualistic or this approach to life, perhaps there are horrible people on this side and there are horrible people on that side. And I would say that there are horrible people everywhere. Everybody is capable of causing serious damage. But if we're only judging one side, then we're doing an injustice to society. So that's why I put in some rules or some definitions about emotional abuse. Because if we're going, if you sort of appreciate this idea that we can go back down the path of equity as opposed to criminal justice and find balance, I think that that's the best place to address something like emotional abuse. So emotional abuse, some of this comes from that wheel of power, power and control. The intention to gain power and control over the victim, resulting in the domination over their body, mind, and spirit. The abuser, be they male or female, leverages a combination of the following tools, sort of like a factor test. So I've highlighted gaslighting, shame, false light, consortium, lean on responsibility, domination over independence, abuse of process, threats and intimidation, and some of the, you know, some of the times you might see that. But from the legal aspect and from the judicial aspect, being able to identify why a person might, or being able to identify some of this stuff might help some practitioner see through the intentions. So in particular, a common term, and I don't know if it's if you've heard it, gaslighting, but the idea is it is distorting the past. This conflict between these two people, this happens on a societal level, but it also happens within a marriage. If you have one side, I mean, that's, you can think of a, you know, an example in healthy relationships, you know, it's not as much as a problem, but in abusive relationships, obviously it's much more damaging, but distorting the past. That's not what I said. That's not what I, okay, maybe I said that, but that's not what I meant. I meant this. So you distort the past arguments to seduce, to suit today's argument. And then tomorrow you do the same thing. That's basically what gaslighting is, but it's a common term that's used by young people. It comes from a movie, I think from the 60s or something like that, that was about sort of mental manipulation. But this is a tool here to say that if you see it, if you look at a situation and you see, well, here, look in the footnotes. If you have this balanced view or an understanding that emotional abuse is a powerful thing, so strong that by text, a young girl can convince a young boy to climb back into the car in a garage to go kill himself, you understand, there is real power here. An understanding of it might give some explanation to how a much bigger guy could submit himself to physical violence by a smaller woman. I'm not trying to present this as male versus female, just a different understanding, but also explain perhaps why a female that is being abused, why she might stay in an abusive household. You know, we have the withholding of physical abuse, physical affection, shaming by verbal abuse constantly. A lean on responsibility. And not only that, perhaps if you can't abuse the person, you abuse the children, and then therefore the person sticks around to protect the children. Controlling every part of their lives. I'm not going to go down into it further, but one thing I did want to say is that it's fascinating to me that this also reflects the criminal justice system. We do all that stuff too. Removing from the family. Separating from the kids. It was so upsetting to see it at the border, but all they had to do to separate families was to put their families into criminal justice. So why, if we're willing to do it and we're quite willing to do it to our own, why is it a problem if we're willing to do it to other people? Well, really, all I'm suggesting again is just backing away from that a little bit and understanding it a little bit. And once you start to do that, you know, some of the comments and things like that you might see, or, you know, men's rights sorts of things and women's rights, just you see the pain and you see how it happens. There is so much here, and it's brutal. But I mean, you guys know that you've been in criminal justice for a while. Family law, for example, that's another example. The ways that you abusive process is possible, and then you see how we can create our own toxicity. And you relate back to that story that we have about if you feed one wolf, it becomes healthy and strong. You starve the other one, and it becomes toxic. Perhaps we have some role in that. And all it is just a suggestion that we back off of that. The presenter that was from the YouTube video talked about emotions, and I thought this quote was pretty fantastic. So from World War II, Field Marshal Bernard Montgomery, he was talking about leadership. He was it's an old interview, and he's talking about his experience in the Somme and then his experience as a World War II leader. Now I have found, of course, that bottled up inside men are great emotional forces, and they've got to be given an outlet. And that outlet must be positive and constructive and must warm the heart and excite the imagination. And if I could gain their confidence and their trust and their respect, then the greatest achievements became possible within that little group. That's really all I've tried to think. I think it probably summarizes the entire philosophy of this of the alternative of these guidelines. The rule, these guidelines are meant to be minimal, not meant to be lenient, but only because I don't want to, my thought is, why create a whole new set of laws? This is just meant to answer the most fundamental questions, like how is it that we can facilitate some communication between a defendant and the state? There are, like I said, a lot of the tools already exist. And one of them, even within procedural tools, I think Rule 32.2 for diversion talks about an agreement being made and signed between a defendant and and the state. That's to sort of stay within the criminal justice system. But I am suggesting that we remove them entirely from the criminal justice system. Still making sure that there is still accountability, but letting go of some of the control and exciting the heart and the imagination and giving them ideas. There were some ideas I had in the back, and that's in Appendix 2, different ways to approach, quote-unquote, sentencing somebody. From the Article 15 conversation, the things that I'm saying have some substance. If there's anything to this, these people, if inspired enough, will commit their own time out of their sense of duty. So I put a case example in there from North Dakota, and it was relating to a gentleman that had caused some damage by having a fire during a burn ban period. And by the process, there was some communication between the prosecutor and the defendant, found out and determined that he liked volunteering, didn't have any money, owns a house, but he enjoyed volunteering, and he already volunteered at a local nonprofit. So come up with a solution. The city needs some help with maintaining a particular, maintaining part of the town. Why don't you volunteer there? Why don't you do some community service? Turns out he loves the idea and potentially, assuming it all goes well, even after his mandated period of volunteering is over, he's still going to clear that path. You've spoken to him. You've helped the community. You're rebuilding the social fabric. There's just great potential. This isn't meant to start out fast. It's not meant for everybody. It's just a specialized tool to start rebuilding the social fabric. And that's it. Resources. There are resources. A strong one in particular is Free Through Recovery that's available in North Dakota. It mimics a lot of this. And that program creates a plan for a person to address everything from mental health to some of their financial needs to housing to jobs, but it's meant to solve problems instead of add to them. And also there's money for care coordinators, the person that coordinates all of this. So perhaps, maybe just an idea, perhaps it might be available to a defense attorney in a rural area that you might be able to get paid $400 a month to help somebody.
Where is this money at right now?
Okay, so what's that?
Where's the money at right now? I'm curious, because earlier was brought up the idea that financing some of these ideas is going to be difficult. And to me, that's the 800-pound elephant in the room, is that we have so many ideas, and the legislature has been presented with those ideas, and they adopt them, but they do not give the true money that's needed to follow through and execute on it.
In this case,
well, I'm curious to know, where is this money you're talking about?
It already exists. It already has been funded. I believe it was the DOJ, DOC, the Department of Corrections, that relinquished like $3 million or something like that.
Well, someone back here just said that for 2 years they haven't seen things.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that, and I think that's fantastic. But at least if this idea is something of interest, then there's push for it. There's a bill 2012, Senate bill being considered right now to expand Free Through Recovery. I'm going to follow up on it just out of interest.
The recovery program is a good program if that's the issue they're having, and the $7 million that was set aside last session was just a drop in the bucket of what it's needed. Not getting, at least not out in Western North Dakota, they're not getting.
And we've had a little bit more success in Central. I come from Devil's Lake. We've had a little bit of more success with it. Actually, Judge Christofferson was one of the people that was sort of pushing it before he retired or after he retired. In fact, I think he's on the conference, so if he wants to chime in, he can. But we've had some success. But when you start talking about free through recovery, it's a very limited amount of people. I mean, it's not, it's like a drug court, and it's like a drug court to the extent that you're putting some extra resources in a program, but you have relatively, you know, a few people that are involved in the program.
And so that might be in different in Cass County. I personally don't feel like we have the limited resources, and it just might be because we're Imperial Cass. I don't know, but I think Free Through Recovery, I was super skeptical about how it would work. And so far I've been pleasantly surprised with how it's been working in Cass. And it's not perfect by any means, but it's definitely steps in the right direction.
And when I talked to somebody from Free Through Recovery, the way that they understood this new bill is that it might expand Free Through Recovery outside of, sounds like it's from successes that they've had, but then that it dovetails with this, because we're trying to say that, go ahead.
Well, there's two different things that are going on here too. So when the state wanted Free Through Recovery, they wanted a recovery system to deal with guys that did serious crimes. And when they had the initial meetings, it was the folks in the community were saying, no, we want to help the guys that have misdemeanors and aren't really involved, so that, you know, we might have more success helping these guys out than the guys that are on the more serious side. But eventually it's evolved to dealing with folks that are coming out of prison or charged with felonies and stuff. And I'm pleased with the progress, but there's a lot more to be done. So, but I think also the legislature has been satisfied too.
This is Judge Christofferson. And, the thing about the Free Through Recovery is it's limited to felons coming out of prison as well as formal probationers in the community. So it's a very limited group of people that you're working with. And the real key success to it is peer support people who help the offender as a peer support. The problem was there was no paying for those peer support people in our community, and I think the legislature is hoping to do some funding of peer support, not only for the Free Through Recovery, but some other programs through social services. So, and of course, it's optional. They don't have to go into it, and they don't have to have a peer support coordinator, or a person. And so, you know, there's some limits to it, but it is a key way to success for small numbers of people. And I think every community that started it has seen that. Thank you.
I've been prosecuting for 34 years in a rural county. I can tell you, first of all, Free Through Recovery is not available. We're not touched by it whatsoever. Do we have a drug problem? We have such a drug problem, we got a federal task force working in the southern part of the that is dealing on a day-to-day basis with multiple dependents, obviously, multiple people that are bringing pills in, multiple arrests for methamphetamine, heroin, black tar, whatever. We don't have Free Through Recovery. We don't have Recovery Reinvented. We don't have the health insurance that you've listed there, and that's the good part. You can't get it if you're in jail, right? So you got to kick them out. Do we use Rule 32 twos? Yes, we do in certain circumstances, but then I'm the probation officer. I'm one person in my office. I've got two part-time assistants that work. I'm going to be the probation officer, make sure that they do what they're supposed to do. I don't know where they're from, other than they're coming from North Carolina, Arizona, Texas, Colorado, California,
Michigan.
And Michigan, big-time Michigan. And I'm supposed to do that. And instead, what I've been asking for is that in the rural counties, there's two classes of citizens in North Dakota. There's those that live in the larger cities. Like you said, Cass County has lots of ability to get these people. I don't think, I'm not disagreeing with your first premise that we have to understand that there are two different types of people. I've known that for years. On the other hand, how do I get services to them when they don't have a driver's license and they say, you got to go to Minot? It's 55 miles away. There's no public transportation to get them. What is DOCR? That's right. Thank you, bro. DOCR says, well, you know, we'll get it through your Human Service Center. Human Service Center now does not even have outreach to come to Montreal County. 55 miles away and they can't send someone out. So our county, in response to it, spends $65,000 out of general fund money to bring a chemical dependency evaluator and a person who does mental health to come and try to help with not only our jail population, but our general population. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what's out there. And the state has continually says, we'll take care of this, don't worry, but I know the truth. And the truth is that they're not taking care of the problems in the rural areas. We are not, by any sense of the stretch of the imagination,
we don't have
disagreeing with your first premise out there. What I'm totally disagreeing with is that your solutions that you have in here don't exist in rural counties in the western part of the state.
Certainly.
And even if you get further west than we are, there's no mental health services whatsoever in Williston. Dickinson supposedly now is going to be having a mental health screening and maybe an intake center. There's been nothing for years. Human service centers have become closed units. You have to come to them. And if you want to get into them, you've got to show up at 9 o'clock. And at 10 o'clock, they close their door for open intake. And if you're the ninth person in line, they say, come back tomorrow. That's a hell of a response to someone who's going through a traumatic situation within the family. And we're trying to deal with it. And we're trying to also deal with the epidemic that we have out in the western part of the state, as with all of the places, of people committing suicides. Come on, state of North Dakota, wake up. Get the services back out to us. And don't say that we put $7 million into it. They waved the big flag last year. And tell you what, not one dime of that came to Western North Dakota. Check it out. It's the truth.
Yeah, no, I absolutely understand. And it's,
if I could chime in a little bit there too, though. Honestly, I think what he's getting at, and part of the whole there's no money there or anything, part of it kind of falls on you to a degree. We're the number, what is it, number three or number four most prosecuting driving under suspension state in the country. So you have an individual who doesn't have a license because he didn't pay child support or he didn't do that. He wants to get in his car to go to treatment, and he's prosecuted for driving under suspension, and now his license is suspended even further. And I'm not saying let crimes go, but to a degree, when we are comparing an addiction problem to a driving under suspension, what do you want? Do you want him to get the help, or do you want him to sit in jail because he drove under suspension?
And I would say in response to that, go check my record in regard to that. And I have dismissed several DUSs because that's what I know.
Well, you need to go to the legislature and get that changed. That are we supposed to not enforce the laws?
So it's always on the prosecutor. You that's
prosecutor
what I get.
On discretion. That's the thing.
When
I
they
have nothing to do with
it. In 1 year, we're supposed to let it go. What then?
And they've expanded on dismissing for years. Now, if you're reinstated within 60 days, we can dismiss the driving under suspension. If you're in 24/7, you can get a temporary restricted license to go to 24/7 and otherwise. I think the problem is there, absolutely. But they've expanded. They've reacted to that and tried to make restricted license more available. But the person with the addiction issue isn't necessarily the one making the good choices to get the restricted license in place. Also, I mean, it is a problem, but it's also a safety issue. Those that are making the bad choices continually, are they the ones you want on your roadways?
Right, and I agree. I mean, Jesus, all you got to do is look at my clients, and yeah, absolutely. And what I'm valuing in the premise here is back off a little bit from the perspective of lock them up, but then also back off a little from the perspective of the defense side. Oh, come on, give them a break. Missed that. Oh, come on.
There's another.
You need to back off both sides.
Right, but I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is that I have this dismiss or prosecute, because there's nothing in between for us in the rural areas.
There's another comment. Go ahead, sir.
We're going to Valley City and driving under suspension within discretion. The city attorney's got to go along with it. Who used to be state's attorney. Well, I mean, he's been involved in this. Found the versions.
No, yes, it is an ultimate dismissal if they've got a license, but they've got to behave themselves. They've got to pay
time this and cost.
Who monitors that then?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Pardon?
Who monitors?
The city attorney and,
right.
And me.
Yeah, and exactly. What I'm saying is that that creates a
that
problem.
That makes
for
us the
probation
officer.
We're the probation
officer.
Repository, there's a...
They can volunteer.
We're on a bit of a time, and we're going to come back to all of this stuff because I think that there are answers there, but I absolutely understand that the rural areas are suffering, and some of it does come from laws that are created in big cities where the resources are just different. And so, do they have the desire to mitigate some of the damages? And I don't know, but we're going to come back to it. If there is something to this, if there is some commitment here, if there is some sense of desire to be involved in the community, maybe this guy will do it for you. You want a program? Maybe he'll go fight the legislature if you just inspire him. And I believe that. I volunteered my time to do this. There's a veteran that I just happened to meet that was at the Grand Forks Bar, and he just retired, and he's looking for something to do. There's guys that want a cause to fight for. It's that guy right there, and he wants it. He'll do it for you. You just got to inspire them. The awesome power of the courts, your judicial order, your contempt orders, all of that stuff is geared towards right now just piling that on the guy. Why not just use that awesome power that you've got to just turn it just a little bit? It's just a thought. It's just a thought. It's whole. It's excited thinking, but you look at the groups, like you look at Alcoholics Anonymous, you look at any of the other 12-step programs, there are programs that exist without money. And they're self-supporting. Anyways, I'll stop there.